How we going, mates? Welcome back to a Mariners Monday edition of the Top Step. This is for all my Mariner fans. We have a lot of them. This was something that was asked of me about a month ago to do like a Mariners edition of the Top Step. So what I like to do, I do a weekly recap. We'll talk about some of the top performers, who's doing well, who's struggling. Look ahead for this road trip that's coming up. Also tell a little story too. I've been thinking about Chris Flexen since yesterday, and it kind of prompted this story in my head. That's something that happened to me back in the day. So we're going to get into all that. Before we do, whether you're a Mariner fan or not, Grant Balfour is going to be with me later on in the week, where we just go through a bunch of gibberish. We talk baseball. We have a lot of fun. We have some good laughs. Two Aussies, two former MLB players, breaking guys down, telling funny story, Aussie word of the day. That's later on in the week. But for now, we're doing the Mariners edition to the Top Step. So make sure you subscribe. Tell your mates, all you Mariner fans out there. I know they're in a little bit of limbo right now as to what we can expect from this team. Are they good? Are they playing below expectations? Are they just going to be mediocre? Are they going to figure this out? We're going to get to all that in these sessions, the Mariner Mondays. So go subscribe so you don't miss another episode. All right, let's get into this Mariners edition, Mariner Monday edition of the Top Step.
No matter what happens, Ryan Roland Smith has something to tell his grandkids right here.
On the breaking ball, he struck him out. Yeah, that will be a story for the rest of his life as he strikes out Ken Griffey Jr.
This is Grant Balfour being Grant Balfour. Yeah. He is, as you mentioned, Jim, he's amped up. He talks a lot. In fact, he has the demeanor of a guy that wants to fight you.
You'll never say that I'm not killing them. Killing them.
All right, so first thing I want to talk about is the homestand. Obviously, last time we talked, it was during the Rockies series. We had Jeff Levering on the last edition, who is the play-by-play voice for the Milwaukee Brewers. So we had the Brewers and we had the St. Louis Cardinals in town. Two really tough matchups. They really were. And the reason I say that, I know you look at the Cardinals' record and you're like, you know, they're struggling too, but that's a good team, man. They can absolutely thump. And we saw that throughout these last couple of days. And the biggest difference was with these last two teams, comparing them against the Rockies, is that bullpen too. You get to that bullpen, it's going to be tough going. I was in the booth on Saturday night, and I was watching Miles Michaelis. The Mariners got a chance to knock him out of the game, but then I'm thinking to myself, man, close game, but that bullpen is going to hold it down. Way different to what we saw in that Rockies series. And one thing that's, you know, evident too, when you are going to play all these one-run games like the Mariners, like they have, we saw it last year, I don't think it's going to be the trend. I could be wrong. I said this last year as well. That's going to stick around where they're playing all these tight games. Your bullpen is crucial, and what you do late in games, all those big innings, how can you generate some pressure, right? So I want to go back to a couple moments, especially Friday and Saturday night. So Friday night, you got Steven Matus, who he's struggling. I get it. The Cardinals pitching staff had been struggling, and it was time for Mariners to go for the throat, right? But he looked way better, man. I was watching some videos of him, you know, leading into that game. He just could not get it done with two strikes. The Cardinals pitching with two strikes has been brutal. They've been vocal about it. Wilson Contreras was vocal about it, the new catcher with the Cardinals. But what they did, and this is what you do, and this is what good teams do, when you have a starting pitcher who's trying to get through that last little batch of pitches to finish the night off strong, all of a sudden, you put that pressure on, and that's exactly what they did. The two walks you saw with Julio and Eugenio Suarez. That Suarez walk was massive. AJ Pollock comes up, gets that big blow. But before that, they knocked Steven Matus out of the game. That was huge. Then guess what? Saturday night again, they did it. Miles Michaelis, Teoscar Hernandez comes up. And he's another dude who's struggling. He's the opening day starter for the Cardinals and just signed that extension. And he's up there, and you could see it, man. He was good up until that last inning. You could see him. He's just like, come on, man. Like, I'm finally starting to find my footing in the season. I'm coming off an outing, his last time out, that he battled through. It was like 5 2/3, whatever it may be. And now he's got the Mariners, and he's like, man, I'm feeling good again. All of a sudden, I'm getting some punch outs. I'm getting that fastball away from the middle of the plate. I'm getting ground balls, etc. And you could see it, man. And I'm telling you, and I'm not saying this just because the a lot of people think because of the pitch clock, a lot of, you know, ex-players I'm talking to, they're talking about guys' mentality and stuff because the pitch clock and the game speeds up. And I'm, yeah, sure, that might be true. But man, you could see it unraveling. I was doing color with Aaron Goldsmith. I kept saying, I'm like, they got him, they've got him, and then whack. Teoscar Hernandez comes up, 3-2 count, gets a fastball, and then you could just see Miles Michaelis' reaction. That's massive, man. When you have a team that can knock out starting pitching, right? I know the Cardinals are struggling, but man, it's huge when you can do that to a team, you know, in that sixth inning, seventh inning. Massive. All right, so with that being said, yesterday, Chris Flexen, all right? Now, who have to dive into this. Now, he's struggling. There is no doubt whatsoever. I was talking to Pete Woodworth before the game. I showed him a text to say, hey, what do you got on Flex, man? What does he need to do? And, yeah, he gave the – which Scott Servais talked about. He has to use all his pitches. It's not like he's got that one or two – that one secondary pitch he can just lean on to get that big swing and miss. He's a dude who needs four pitches, and they all need to be working. I get it. Absolutely. But a couple other things to think about here as well. And let's go a little bit of a chronological order here. You got a dude who, and I'm going way back here because I want to talk about what leads to this place, because there's nothing physical with him. And as I'm looking more and more at it, you know, someone said, oh, the velo's down. Velo's not that down at all. Like when you really go through some of the numbers, maybe it was down from last start, maybe half a mile. But when you look at what he did from 21, 22, 23, velo's right there. The velo's the same. Some of the break on the pitches is a little different. One thing that stands out in all those metrics, which I'll get to in a second, but I want to go back through with Chris Flexen chronologically with where he's at now. And this is what happens, man. And I've been there. I've had some good outings. I've had some really bad ones, okay? And I've had some times where you go out and you just feel like you have no shot in certain counts. Like you're like, oh, man, here we go. You've just put me in this corner. This pitch is not working. This pitch is not working. Now I have to serve it up because I need to be in the strike zone. I can't afford to walk anyone. And whack, and there it is, that big two-run double, whatever it may be. So let's figure this out, right? Last year, he's in the starting rotation. He's not moving from that starting rotation all year long, and he's dealing. He's doing really well. And Chris Flexen's a dude, when you watch and you go back to some of his game logs, he can have a clunker. They all do. And then he comes right back and he deals. He seems to deal right away. And I watch that because a lot of guys, man, when they have that really, really bad outing, they come back and they try and find their footing again, kind of like Miles Michaelis early in this year. They try and find their footing, but they're not as dominant as he has been right after. So it's one of these things where he's like, yeah, no, I'm good. I'm okay. And a lot of that comes with the fact that you're very secure in the fact that you ain't leaving the rotation. And when you're in a situation with Chris Flexen this year, completely different, right? And this goes back to pre-career time for him. So he was in Korea, as we all know, because he washed out of the big leagues. He was a guy that came up and you're constantly looking over your shoulder. You're the 26th, 27th man on a team and you're just trying to stay up in the big leagues. You're constantly looking over your shoulder. Goes to Korea, comes back. He signs a two-year deal. Right? It's crazy. Like all of a sudden now he's got some security. He comes in and some guys really respond to that because they're like, you know what? I'm part of this rotation and I don't have to look over my shoulder so much. And you can ease into certain situations. You have a clunker if you want. You can have a bad inning. But you know what? You're so confident and secure with the fact that I know when I throw these pitches in these counts. Now, fast forward. The end of last year, you're dealing. You get taken out of the rotation, as we all know. Comes into this year, all off season, he's sitting back, whether he wants to admit it or the Mariners want to admit it, he's sitting there going, am I going to get traded because I need to start in the big leagues? He's not a bullpen guy at all, right? And this happens with a bunch of dudes. You just don't see it that much. And especially when they say, hey, I'm just trying to give my team a chance to win, et cetera, et cetera. Because I'm getting to something too. He's post games. I know he throws the cliches a lot. I want to get to that. This is where I'm leading to. So stay with me here. So basically, here he is. He goes into spring training and he's pitching his ass off in spring because he wants to not shove it up everyone's ass, but he wants to basically say, look, I'm a starting pitcher. And he's on audition for another team. If they decide to pull the trigger on a trade or something with Chris Flexen, off he goes and he's in the starting rotation. Then he starts the season. He's in the bullpen. As we all know, Robbie Ray goes down. Now he gets into the rotation, right? He's had a little bit of a, like, as far as prepping for that, it's been a bumpy road. But he's in the rotation. He's like, yes. Now, all of a sudden, I have to stick my neck out here and be like, you know, I have to prove to you all over, even though I did this last year, I have to prove to everyone all over that I belong here in this rotation. And guess what? He knows Robbie Ray in about a month, so he knows his leash is short, where when Robbie comes back, he's going to shoot right back to the bullpen, maybe, right? Unless someone gets injured, whatever. Yeah, but he's looking at that going, man, I have to deal here in this next month. I have to absolutely deal. And then you get off to a rough start. Then you have that game in Chicago, right, where you give it up and it is on display. Place is going crazy. Big comeback. He had that bad inning in Chicago. It's not one thing Pete Woodruff said. He just had that one bad inning. And all of a sudden, you're starting to second guess. A couple things happen. Number one, I'm going straight back to the bullpen. I feel like shit. I'm not giving my team anything right now. So you roll out on Sunday, like yesterday, and whack, first pitch of the game, Lars Nootbaar. See ya, gone. You know that your usual repertoire of pitches, your curveball hasn't been good, so you're shelving it a little bit. Your cut fastball hasn't got that same finish. And by the way, when you go back into some of the numbers, his cut fastball wasn't the same at this time last year either. The fastball and cut fastball have to tunnel the same. Those pitches work with each other. In other words, that, you know, you're getting fastball counts. All of a sudden, you got that late movement, gets off the barrel, weak contact. When you get that as a Chris Flexen type pitcher, you're like, oh, man, here we go. That's my safety net where I'm in a tough count, like I talked about earlier, and I can just go whack that late little cut, get off the barrel to righty or lefty, weak contact. Okay, I have a safety net. Now when I get those two strike counts, I can get here or there. Well, he hasn't got that right now at all. So he's feeling it. Now, he mentioned something in the post-game interview. I don't know if you caught it on our Root Sports post-game show or anything like that, but I was listening. Chris Flexen throws every cliche out there. He's not a guy to wear his heart on his sleeve, which is kind of rare. In 2023, guys will just admit all their stuff. I was a dude, man, who I was like, it was therapy for me sometimes when I talk to reporters. And A, because I understood the relationship with media and the reporters, hence the fact now I'm actually working in that industry now. Some guys don't. Some guys just don't want to. Some guys don't want to even, you know, and these are dudes, man. Like, you know how dudes are, guys are. That's how we are. Like, sometimes we want to keep things to ourselves. I'm like that a ton. But with Chris Flexen, he said one thing. Chris Flexen said one thing to the reporters. He said, you know what, I'm trying to give my team a chance to win, I'm not executing, all those things. But then he drops I think this is rock bottom. Now, when you hear a Chris Flexen say, I think this is rock bottom, you know that what he's going through right now, getting on that plane to fly to Philadelphia, 5 hours, sitting there, contemplating, decompressing, whatever you want to call it, you are in a situation where like, man, this is the worst A, it can get, and B, this is the worst version of me. You have literally weeks to figure this out because Robbie Ray's coming back. You also have been in a situation where, like, you know what? If I hang out in the bullpen and I do well or whatever, there's a chance I may get traded as well. My trade stock goes up. The other part of this is too, he just signed off an extension, so he's essentially a free agent at the end of the year. All this is in his head right now. So I want to talk about real quick story. In 2010, I sucked, man. My if you look at my numbers, it was so hard. And I'm going through that feeling of, in the years past, it was, I'm just going to throw this pitch down and away, and it's going to be weak contact, or you're going to miss it, you're going to foul it back, and I'm going to drop a breaking ball. It was the best feeling ever. Two, I have to be perfect with this pitch. And I don't really want to throw this pitch right now, but it's the only option I really have. He's going to crush it if it is not on the black. That is not a good place to be. I've been there. Chris Flexen's dealing with that right now. And I never forget, I had a teammate, JJ Putz. If you're a Mariners fan, you're my age, which you probably are, you remember JJ Putz, closer for the Mariners, just big dude. I played with him with the D-backs as well. He got traded to the Mets after the 2008 season. But, you know, it was interesting, man. 2007, he was kind of like my big brother. I came up to the big leagues, and he was really helping me out. 2008, he was pissed off at a lot of things. Everyone was. That team was terrible. We had such bad chemistry, and he was just like, you know, screw this. Everyone felt that way. 2008 was such a bad year, right? And so he was dealing with injuries, everything. So our relationship kind of got, like, you know, a little bit sort of dispersed. I wasn't hanging out with him much because he wasn't a super good dude to be around and stuff, because he was feeling it like we all were, right? And I said that to him last year at the MLB draft. He was down at the draft, so was I. We had a great chat about all that. Well, he ends up getting traded off to the Mets. 2009, we have a fun year, boom. And so all of a sudden, you're like, oh, yeah, everyone in 2008 sucked and everyone in 2009 is awesome, right? You kind of have that mindset. And, you know, I was watching him from afar. And then 2010 rolls around, he's with the White Sox. I pitch against the White Sox, and you can look it up. I can't remember. I think it was August or July or something. It was brutal, man. I gave it up. Those fireworks were just pounding my head every time I gave up a hit or a home run. It was brutal. The fireworks that I'm talking about at the White Sox place. Tough place for me to pitch for some reason. I get done with the game, and I'm just shattered. You want to talk about rock bottom? I was a friggin' mess. At this point, I was already talking to not a mental skills coach. I was trying to get hypnotized. I was talking to this other person. I was dealing with depression. I was really struggling. We've all been there, right? At some point when you just cannot figure it out. And when you look from afar or from the outside looking in, you're like, I'm in the friggin' big leagues. Like, why does every day suck for me? I'm in the big leagues. Like, looking back in hindsight, it's easy to say that. But when you're in it, it sucks, man. That's what Chris Flexen's going through right now. Anyway, so I give it up. I'm talking to the media. Well, he somehow caught me talking to the media. I don't know if it was on CCTV or something, or maybe a White Sox reporter had a camera. I can't remember. Dude, he looked at me and he's like, man, that dude needs to, like, basically he needs some support right now, because I was a mess. And I always, you know, with Shannon, Dreyer, and all the regulars who were there back in 2010, they all said, man, you don't have to talk to us right now. I was like, no, I got it. I can talk to you guys. And I just, I wore always on my heart on my sleeve. I was always very emotional when I talked to everyone, good or bad. I get done with the game. I get a text message. I haven't spoke to JJ in ages, man. I get a text from him saying, hey, man, you know, I need to talk to you. I was like, oh, God, here we go. And he called me, and it was great. He said to me, and I brought this up to him last year because I was very emotional about it last year. He said, listen, man, you're in the big leagues. Respect and appreciate every single day you have in the big leagues. It's going to be okay, dude. You are fine. And he gave me kind of the outside looking in perspective. And I needed that, man. I really did need that. And, you know, I ended up going on the Phantom DL or IL. Next day, I had calf injury. No, it wasn't calf injury or back injury or something. I can't remember. I had to fake an injury just to go on the IL because I was an absolute shattered mess. So anyway, Chris Flexen's not that extreme. He is way closer to figuring out than I was in 2010. He's not that bad. But, man, he is having a time right now, and it is it's difficult, man. It is tough. All right, let's get on with. I don't want to upset you too much. Let's talk Jared Kelnick, man. Listen, I feel like I'm going to talk about him every week, and hopefully, if I'm talking about him every week, that dude is going to have dead set an MVP season. The guy is absolutely on fire, and it is sustainable. And here's why. Number one, he's going to play every day now. He is going to play every day because he is hitting lefties. He's hitting .333, slugging .600 against lefties. Therefore, do you remember? Let's go back to spring training, by the way. Remember when we're talking about coming in, there was that if he's going to make the team, he's up against Cade Marlowe. He's up against maybe someone trading to get someone in left field. And by the way, they said, oh, yeah, Jared Kelnick's going to play. And everyone's like, well, has he earned that spot? And this is in spring training. And I get it. But he's going to platoon. I guarantee you at that moment when Jared Kelnick heard that, he's like, no, I'm not platooning, right? I'm playing every friggin' day. I'm sure he did. And, you know, look, he's had some self-doubt. I get it over the years. But two things. Number one, crushing lefties means he's going to play every day. And look, AJ Pollock's doing just fine lately too. He's hitting righties as well, which is great. He usually crushes lefties, but he's doing great. The other thing too, crushing fastballs, man. He's hitting .444 off fastballs. I don't even know some of the power numbers against him. I just pulled it up real quick. I was like, man, he is murdering fastballs. You cannot be one-dimensional against Jared Kelnick. You can't just feed him breaking balls. He's going to get them, sure. He's doing way better against breaking balls. I think last year he was in like 050 against breaking balls, and now this year he's like in the 250s, 240s, which is awesome, by the way. So he's recognizing breaking balls, and guess what? Doesn't swing, or he takes them. He doesn't chase. His chase rate is way down. And guess what? You have to come back with a fastball unless you can dot up three sliders in a row. And even big leaguers struggle to do that. And he's getting those fastballs. The other thing too, I get sick of hearing people say, oh, you have to hit the ball to left field, right? So some people are like, oh, if you hit the ball to left field, you're going to be great. Not everyone is Edgar Martinez, right, or inside out. But Jared Kelnick, I will say this. Coming into this year, and even last year too, they wanted him to hit up the middle more. They wanted him to stay up the middle. And everyone's like, well, he's just trying to pull the ball all the time. He's not trying to pull the ball. What happens is when you are struggling and you are just dying to, when you just dying to make something happen, you press, what do? You get urgent and you recognize the pitch early your eyes light up, you salivate, and you jump out to get that pitch. And your timing's off. It's one of those things. When you have never swung and missed this much, I'm talking about last year for Jared Kelnick, because he's always been a stud since he was about 2 years old. When you haven't swung and missed this much and you see a pitch like, oh, my God, oh man, there's a fastball, whack, you're jumping out on that pitch. Remember those couple home runs he hit off the right field foul pole? Even those swings, he crushed those balls, don't get me wrong, but you're like, oh, man, exposed to up to secondary pitches, exposed to fastball movement. Now, all of a sudden, timing is good, understands that he's so athletic that he can stay up the middle with power. So, like, if you ever been to a batting cage or whatever it may be, and you whack hit a ball off that right side screen, like off the netting, off the right side, you're like, oh, crush that ball because you're yanking it, you're pulling it, right? And that's where most of your power is going to come. Let's get real here. Most of your power is going to go to right field. And most smaller dudes who don't have the same exit velo, if they are going to hit a bunch of bombs, they're going to go to right field. Like, you remember, like, Dan Ugler. I don't know if you remember him, but some of the little dudes, even Jose Altuve, most of the home runs are going to go to the pool side. But when you are a dude like a Mike Trout, and I'm using them in the same sentence, Jared Kelnick, and you have that kind of power and that athleticism, and you stay up the middle, I'm telling you, good things happen, man. I think it's what, five? I think only one ball has gone to right field for a home run in Chicago. The rest, center field to right. So it doesn't mean that he's trying to go the other way. No. It just means his timing is rock solid, and he's letting that ball get a little closer so he can recognize if it's going to break or spin, and then he's absolutely murdering the ball. So these are the reasons why it's sustainable. Yeah, he might cool off a little bit. Don't get me wrong. He's going to cool off a little bit. But man, Jared Kelnick has been so fun to watch. Those couple of balls, and by the way, did you see where those pitches were? I was doing the game Saturday night, and the ball was down and in, and he hit the ball to left field, and Goldie gave his big home run call. And I'm in my head as he's around in the bag going, okay, where do I go with this? Because I'm all excited. I want to give that big breakdown of, but I was just in shock. I'm not going to lie. The pitch was down and in, whack, and he hit that ball to left field, and then guess what? He backed it up, did it again, a little hanging slider from Flaherty, who again filthy throwing 97. And inside out of it, it was ridiculous. So again, really good to see, from Jared Kelnick. Even the at-bat, Zach Thompson, right? I know he struck out, but just even the difference on that at-bat against Zach Thompson with the Cardinals on Saturday night. Zach Thompson's like, 95 with a massive high-spin breaking ball. And he looked good. He looked comfortable. Like I said, I know he punched him out, but he did look good even on that at bat, which was good to see. All right. So again, it's if he stays up the middle and it's not that he's trying to hit the ball the other way, all that means is his timing is on point, and he's recognizing pitches, he's laying off breaking balls, and he's trusting the fact, you know what? I can backspin this ball right back to that pitcher's head or right to the top line of that center field line. And if he catches it out in front, if it's dropped a little bit of speed on a secondary pitch, I'm going to catch it out in front. Fine. If I'm a little late, I'm still going to be able to drive that ball to left field. So super, super important. All right, let's look ahead. They've got the Phillies coming up and the Blue Jays. Couple offensive, really good offensive teams. Pitching has got to be on point. So the bullpen. Now, the starting pitching has been great. I'm going to get into some of my top performers here in a second. But I have to give a shout out to my man Matt Brash. Pitched on Saturday night, looked good. And if you notice, the velo was back to 98 to 100. Not because because he's just trying to throw harder. No, because he was comfortable with his rhythm and timing mechanically. That's what happens. We saw him on that road trip, even early days of this homestand. Couldn't get that slider over at all. Breaking balls all over the place, command goes. So what happens is, just like I say this all the time to kids, not that they ever drive, but if you're, let's say you're driving along on the freeway, we've all been there, and you're checking Google Maps, or you're trying to get on Spotify to listen to the Top Step podcast, whatever you're doing, you go on 60, you look down, doing whatever, thinking that you're still driving at 60 miles per hour, you look at me, oh shit, I'm going 45, whoops, someone's frigging blasting the horn behind me or coming around me, giving me the stink eye because I'm going 45. Because what happens is, as a pitcher, when you are trying to process or do two things at once, multitask, we can't do it. When you're trying to multitask, you just simply move slower. Matt Brash, threw a filthy slider early in the game on Saturday, and then he was like, yeah, here it is. I got it. Whack, now I can move full speed. That's when you see the 97 to 100, and that's a really good sign. They are going to need that bullpen. Diego Castillo looked a little bit better yesterday. That's going to be massive coming up in this series. Plus, they get to go back to Toronto as well. Nuts. Remember, Toronto was where they had that most epic comeback. That was insane. One of the games of the year last year, all over Major League Baseball. We all remember it, right? The break the drought. They win. They get the first game. Luis Castillo just dominated, and the second game was just insane. It was a blast. Well, they get to go back to Toronto. Teoscar Hernandez goes back to Toronto as well. All right. I am getting through this. I'm going to get to a couple questions here in a minute. I just want to get to some of my top performers. Where are they at? All right, so a couple guys. I've already talked about Jared Kelnick. Big performance, obviously doing big things. Teoscar Hernandez, he's starting to get scary. I love it, right? He is starting to have a big smile on his face. He is starting to look friggin' good. I said this, I think it was last week or maybe the first week. He was just getting slider after slider, breaking ball after breaking ball, and just not recognizing it, straight up chasing like crazy. He was swinging it. I think it was like he's getting 70%. He's swinging at 70% sliders, which is insane, and missing 60% of them. That rate has gone way down. I haven't looked recently after yesterday, but it's gone way down, the numbers on that. And when he does that and he doesn't chase, just like Jared Kelnick, what happens? Gets fastball middle, one of the best mistake hitters in the game, not just because he hits mistakes, because he punishes mistakes. Last year he hit like 500 pitches middle, and the exit velo was through the roof. So that's good to see. They need him in the middle of the lineup. I still think he has to hit four 100%. So when he starts to really level out in a good way, I think he's going to be back in that four hole, which is massive as well. So Eugenio Suarez coming up with a big hit on Saturday night. So Teoscar is one of my big top performers. Obviously Jared Kelnick. What about my man Marco Gonzalez? Now listen, don't roll your eyes, right? I love Marco Gonzalez. You all know that. The reason why I like Marco, right, is because, first of all, our expectations shift very fast. And some people are like, oh, Marco this, Marco that. Oh, Flexen should have stayed in the rotation last year, et cetera, et cetera. Listen. When you go through the rankings of starting pit, like let's say you go in the top 10 rotations in the game, right? You've got the top two, maybe top three, just filth. No one has a fifth starter like the Mariners do. Look around, man. The Phillies, you're going to see it as well, right? We saw that with the even with the Cardinals, Rockies, the Brewers, right? You don't have the fifth dude who gives you 20 plus quality starts and gets deep into a game the way Marco Gonzalez does. I'm telling you, when you get through, you know, some of these high leverage games, these close games, when you got your studs, all of a sudden you get to that fifth starter spot, and you got Marco getting you into the sixth, seventh, giving you a couple runs. I'm sorry. So top performer because 9 punch outs plus his daughter Sienna. Congratulations, Marco, your second kid. Your 2 girls. I did girl. I did boy. Girl and boy. Excuse me. So I got lucky. So you got to keep going, man. Till you get that boy. You got to get boys and girls, dude. 9 strikeouts after hanging out in the hospital for a few days, no sleep, dude. That's insane. I thought he was going to come back and just maybe have a pitch count or something or struggle, but dude, he had that. This game isn't as important as bringing a kid into the world or looking after my wife mentality, apparently, because he friggin' dominated 6 innings. I know they lost that game, but 9 punchouts. Good to see. All right, let me get to some questions. How long we've been? Okay, let me get to some questions here real quick. I'm going to get to 2, and I appreciate all the questions. If you've got a question or a comment about anything with the Mariners or whatever it may be, hit me up at -18. Or, oh, did you guys see Grant Balfour go viral over the week? I put it up at Top Step Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. Oakland, obviously, the news about Oakland. We're going to talk to Grant about that in a couple of weeks. But Oakland are moving to Vegas, apparently. So, with that being said, they had a clip of him coming out, and I put it up on, I think I shared it on our social, but dude, insane. I'm going to share some more Grant Balfour footage, mate. He was just an absolute weapon when he came into the game. So good to see. All right. So real quick. Oh, and by the way, too, not a pat on the back to me or toot my horn here, but massive thanks to everyone. I know I said this on Twitter, but I love it. Like, obviously, I love doing color. I got in there on Saturday, and I got some really good comments, good feedback, and everything. So thank you all. I hope to do more games in the booth. I love it. It's fun working with Dave Sims and Goldsmith. I love working with both those guys. All right, so here we go. So I've got. I'm just reading through this. All right, let's do this one. All right, Jason. Here's one. Jason Rivas, Trident Hawk says he basically. I'm not going to read this word for word, but he's basically, why do the Mariners strike out so much, and they always seem to do it in big moments? So at Trident Hawk 420, Jason Rivas. All right, so. I was looking at this the other day. I'm just going to pull up some numbers here because I want to have a real quick look. Now, listen, when you're watching your team, and we all know this, if you're sitting in Kansas City right now, you're like, oh, why does this team do this? It feels like they always strike out or don't come up with that big hit when it really matters. That's across baseball. Now, look at some of these numbers, right? First of all, the Mariners in high leverage situations, okay? I'm looking at this right now. High leverage, they're hitting 290 in high. Basically, with high leverage situations, as you could imagine, mean that it's a close game, runners on, it really counts. They're hitting 290 in those high leverage situations, all right, when it counts. RBIs, they've got 68 RBIs. That's right about the middle of the pack. They've got 45 strikeouts with runners in scoring position, and they're hitting 254, okay? That's they're hitting 254, which is 13th. In the big leagues, pretty good. And they've struck out 45 times. That's 22nd in the big leagues. So, again, they're doing pretty good. All right, the reason it gets magnified sometimes is, one, because your team's hovering around 500. They're playing a little bit below expectations. And number two, you just face two really, really good bullpens, man. We heard Jeff Levering talk about the bullpen with the Brewers. You went from the Rockies, bullpen is a struggle, you could see that, to the Brewers and then the Cardinals, two really, really good bullpens, plus guys you haven't seen before. It's not like they're playing the Angels or the A's or like they used to and see them a bunch. They haven't seen these bullpens before. So that's kind of why it feels that way. But they're actually doing way better than what they did last year. I agree. They do need to get back to that production, especially in close games, as they did the last couple months of the season last year. But it has been a bit of a pickup from April of last year. Okay. Next one. Oh, here's an Andrés Muñoz question. Okay. I was going to talk about him earlier. Andrés Muñoz. So Ryan Turner at turns 44. What's up, Ryan? Nice name. Muñoz coming back this week. Who comes up? Who goes down? Diego Castillo. Well, first of all, Muñoz is not coming back this week. Muñoz is actually doing live batting practice next week. So he's going to do a couple live BPs. He'll probably get out in the game. They're not going to rush him. Andrés Muñoz is, hate to say it, guys, he's still a good 3 or 4 weeks at best away from being in games. The reason why, hard thrower. He's come off that major injury with the elbow a couple of years ago. They don't want to push it. That's not a situation. It's not a. Robbie Ray's a little different. Robbie Ray will dictate the terms. The Mariners are not going to push Andrés Muñoz. And even if they feel like they're desperate, you have that feeling like they're going to really protect him. So at best, I'm going to say he's 3 weeks away. And who comes up? Who goes? I don't think you're going to tap into, and we've seen this already, you're not going to tap into your little prospect source down in AAA or AA yet. You know, that's going to happen more June, July. You're going to start rolling out these guys like the Topers, who's been awesome, by the way, and some of these other guys, big saucies. How do you say his name? Sacedo. Last night, I should know his name as I'm talking to you guys. But you're going to roll out these kind of guys, and Topers been brilliant, which is awesome, before you start tapping into like some of these young prospects. And also, look, Diego Castillo, man, I could be wrong, but they're gonna stick with Diego Castillo as long as they can. He's good. He looked better. I know he gave up a bomb the other night, but he does look better. And that's again, it's just that command. His walk rate is through the roof. I think it's like 7, 8, or 9 or something like that. Insane. He's going to figure that out. You have that feeling. He looked better the other night. I'm glad he did multiple innings to get some work in. So with that being said, guys, I've run out of time on the questions. I'll get to more of them next week. If you do have a question, hit me up on social media. Grant Balfour is going to be back with us next week. We've got a lot of good things coming up. I'm going to have some players join me as well, either via Zoom. I like to do them more when they're in person. I really do. Matter of fact, I was going to try and get Taylor Motter on, but he got sent down, man. I was texting him. I was going to get the ex-Mariner who clawed his way back to the big leagues on just to hear his story. I love those stories. They're the best. But with all that being said, guys, thanks for tuning in. Let's go, Mariners. A big road trip coming up. I think they're getting over the hump here. They just have to solidify a few things. We'll have Grant Balfour later on in the week. Go subscribe, mate. Help out the show and tell your mates. Click the share button. Share it on. Text message it to, you know, your buddies who would enjoy some good banter, some good laughs. I'm going to make sure Grant and I are going to have some good laughs this week. Some good old laughs about dumb baseball stories, funny baseball stories, interesting baseball stories, insight, blah, 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 blah. All the good stuff. All right, guys. I appreciate it. Have a good week. Happy Monday. Happy Mariners Monday. And we'll see you later on. All right. See you, mates. Killing them, killing them, killing them, killing them, killing them, killing them.